Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan, and hope you're having a fantastic day. What another eventful day two of the draft for the Mavericks. A lot of stuff to talk about, not only with them, but league-wide. And for more on that, here's Eric Chiafalo.
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and cut the lights out. We'll put the kids down for that afternoon snoozer, and the G-Bag Nation goes all 56 inches around that rim. It's always a special occasion when all 29 of the 30 round two selections were traded picks. You had all picks traded except for pick 50 last night. Dang, when Jaden Bradley became a Toronto Raptor. That was the one team who stood tall in the pocket and delivered on a selection. Every other pick was a traded in some form or fashion pick. Just hilarious with the way that second round played out. But I'm more concerned with the first round. Okay, I'm more concerned.
Wait, you're concerned with the first round over the second round?
Well, not concerned,
okay,
but I'm excited.
RG3.
I'm excited to talk about it. Did you guys see
the MVP would like a word with you, sir.
We have some. SGA is the MVP.
Well, of the finals.
Oh, okay. Jalen Brunson. I get it. Yeah. Okay, so Morez Johnson. We have an article in ESPN where college coaches are talking about some of these players, because the college coaches, of course, know them pretty intimately, many of which recruited them. Maybe they missed out on getting them to their program, but the college coaches know these prospects pretty well. So a couple of the coaches were talking about Morez. One coach said, I love him. I've seen him since he was 14, 15 years old, and I've seen him really, really change his game. And that's why I've been so impressed with him. Morez went through a phase in high school when he was trying to shoot threes, trying to be KD or whatever. Then the summer going into his senior year, he led his league in rebounding, and he turned into what he is today. He said, I'm a four or a five. I'm going to impose my will in the paint. He was the key to Michigan winning it. Called him the key. I think Dusty May would probably agree with you. You have another coach saying, I'm buying Morez Johnson. He's so physically imposing, but it's his defensive instincts and his ability to show real offensive skill. That's really the big question, I think, for most people, is where does this thing go offensively for him? But he says, as you're watching these playoffs, because it was in the middle of the NBA playoffs, he says, there's certain guys you can say he would be awesome in that series. Morez can defend and rebound. If you're a screen door on defense, the other team doesn't have to do anything else. They're just going to run matchup actions at you, and they're going to hunt you on every possession until you prove otherwise. You can put Morez in an NBA playoff series today.
Man, that's cool. You know, he was on KNC earlier, and they asked him, what is the thing about your game that people don't realize? And he said, it was the dribbling, and people think he cannot put it on the floor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to hear that backstory now, apparently he was trying to be that guy up until he was 16 or 17 years old, dribbling it quite a bit. And it's probably still enough in there that he can dribble and pass sufficiently so you can have a five-man skilled unit out there. But he's not looking to do that because he realized where his strengths and weaknesses are. But, you know, you can run boring offense with a great point guard and floor spacers. You know, that's a way of doing it. And if that's Masai's vision and we just need people with baseline passing and dribbling, I think he easily checks that box.
Yeah, I mean, I do love hearing some of these coaches that are, you know, buying into maybe some of the offensive upside with him, and even he himself saying, like, yeah, you didn't really get to see my offensive game on full display with the way things were at, you know, in Michigan. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Dusty May has been vocal about thinking, at least from a jump shooting standpoint, this is something that can really end up developing here for him. And so with him having the inside scoop, like, at this point, I think we trust Ian Dusty, and we just hope that Ujiri and company understand what they're doing here. But no one should know this player more than your head coach. And clearly that was identified. And I think it was, I really do think that even without Dusty May being here, the Mavericks, that would have been their selection. But
really,
these two, I think they're just married on, you know, May and Ujiri in particular are married on the type of team and the type of players that they want. So
Dusty May is super malleable.
Yeah, so, and that's, you know, not talked about enough.
100%, and I think that the malleability factor here is one where Dusty May is just going to be able to utilize the roster that he's given, but he clearly loves Rez.
Yeah, I mean, the M in Dusty May stands for malleability. and people don't really understand that.
Day three. I think
you're right.
Day three, I've used the word. Yeah.
So apparently, in every show now.
Apparently, and I didn't realize this, but next year it's going to be in the second round of the draft. It's going to be a snake format.
They're really trying to just do what they can to make the second round watchable. Because I got to say, last night was a beating. I turned it off after the Mavs pick. Doing this whole, like, splitting it into two nights, it's such a waste. Now, night one went late, I will say that.
It did go very late.
Maybe just for, hey, people aren't going to stay up for it regardless, but there's no way to make that second night of the NBA draft really watchable. It's just not good.
Well, so whatever order the lottery ends up being, it'll be reversed during the second round. And so they're doing it, like, I guess for the first half of the picks, whoever picks number one in the first round will pick 16th. In the second round.
Okay.
So, I don't know. They're changing things up a little bit. But if you're the 16th pick in the draft next year, then on night two, round two, you'll be the number one pick in the second round. So, that's something that the NBA is implementing
Woo-hoo!
Here among a ton of different things.
Is that tanking related?
Yeah, I think so. Hmm. I think so. They don't want you to feel like, oh, yeah, you're so bad, so you're going to get all the best possible players.
Okay.
Whatever pick you're picking.
You don't essentially get a late one as the top pick in the second round. I think this is going to work. You know, now they just need to work on bringing greatness back to the playoffs. We do not have enough veteran teams that can play aesthetically pleasing basketball.
They've spread the talent too thin?
Yeah, you know, I think the trades that we're seeing right now, a lot of them are player dumps. Because we have to free up the money to pay other guys on our roster.
Mm-hmm.
You're making teams choose for the first time in my life. Like, you can't have a great team and be like, yeah, we're going to keep them all. You know, we just use their bird rights and go over and we'll be fine. Now they really have to, you know, make hugely costly basketball decisions. That's why the Nuggets got to the top and haven't been back.
So what do you think about the LaMelo Ball trade?
Crazy.
Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. That is going to be your backcourt in Minnesota. Our buddy Josh Green goes in the deal as well. So it's the Hornets and the T-Wolves making some player swaps here. Ball and Green go to Minnesota. Naz Reid and a bunch of picks go over and pick swaps to Charlotte. So I guess Charlotte wanted to get a little bit bigger. And, of course, the Timberwolves are now in a do-anything-you-can-do to keep Anthony Edwards happy. Because as soon as Giannis got traded, it felt like Anthony Edwards was getting talked about as, like, he's the next one. He's the next one to get sort of disgruntled and want to be traded somewhere. So they bring in LaMelo Ball, and now they're going more backcourt dominant than they are the front court, where they were so loaded with the Big Ben with Reed and Gobert and Randall. And then years ago it was Cat, of course. So now they're doing away with that. I guess they're just trying to... They're trying to zag a little bit with the Wemby stuff. It's like, man, we're not going to go toe-to-toe with bigs.
Hmm.
If we're really going to do anything here, is our best possibility just to be able to score in places that Wemby can't defend?
Yeah,
where he can't defend an entire team that's willing to just take step-back threes all the time.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you got to figure that out one way or another. And this backcourt combination is now going to be incredibly lethal. I think their biggest problem was Anthony Edwards when he gets double teamed. There is nowhere that he can go that increases the probability of scoring. He's not a gifted passer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now you give him an easy out. Your double team, swing it to LaMelo, and you give him that space. He can make the three.
Yeah.
But he's got a compromised defense now that he can get downhill against, and you know, it might really, really open things up for them to be significantly more explosive offensively, because I don't think you have easy answers to stop their offense like you did in the playoffs.
And Anthony Edwards is just, I mean, we remember him being exhausted mm-hmm. from the conference. So his usage rate
versus the Mavs.
Yeah. And now you finally have somebody else that can be a creator, be a ball handler, take some of that off of him. Maybe it actually is ends up working out well for them.
I thought we saw late in that year and then in the play-in game how much LaMelo Ball wants it, though. And I think he's kind of discarded as a goof or a guy that doesn't take basketball seriously. I think he's genius. I think he's a showman. He's obviously undisciplined. And for the Hornets, it's crazy to move on from him. And you're building around Coby White, who's another, you know, good point guard. But Coby White, Con Knipple, I think they want more of a high stability, high floor backcourt instead of the volatility. But giving up on an entertainer like LaMelo Ball, I think as a fan, I'd be disappointed today.
Oh, if you're in Charlotte right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun to watch Edwards and LaMelo. Hopefully LaMelo can stay healthy. That's been one of the issues with him.
Yeah,
yeah, the durability factor. But they're trying to shake things up a little bit there in Minnesota, and I can't wait to see it all unfold. Now, when it comes to superstar names in the league, you have Windhorse saying, "Yeah, I think Jaylen Brown has played his last game in a Celtics uniform." Apparently, a bunch of teams are interested, and so we'll see how that shakes out with Boston now, as they've maybe severed the relationship between the organization and Jaylen Brown. We'll see where he ends up. I love this quote here from Windhorse on Ja Morant, and Ja Morant's kind of been forgotten a little bit, but he calls him, quote, flagrantly available in trade talks. Memphis cannot wait to find a team that's willing to take him. To take him and his contract on. You have the Kawhi Leonard stuff. Will he remain with the Clippers? Apparently that is his preference, but he would also be open to signing an extension with the Toronto Raptors.
What?
This could all come some level of full circle, and when Walchuk gets his mic on, he's going to say something about this.
Going back to Toronto?
Yeah, he's down to sign an extension with Toronto. Toronto's
time,
like, really?
Time.
Now? Now you are?
Jeez.
So they have interest in him. And I think he wants to stay with the Clippers, but I guess Toronto would be one of the teams that he would be down to sign with. So Kawhi Leonard could also be on the move here, and then next week you get the free agency stuff really ramped up, which is going to be exciting. We'll see what ends up happening with LeBron. I think it's going to be all eyes on the Lakers to see what can they do here. Can they find a big man somewhere? I think that's priority number one. Luka's like, please God, get me a big man that can catch some lobs for me.
Yeah.
You know, like that is going to be the big thing here. And I am hoping the Lakers can just fall flat on their face.
That's what I was kind of hoping. Don't we want them not to do 100%. Anything?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it sucks for Luka. I think most Mavs fans are like, you root for Luka, but at the same time, I don't want to see the Lakers do something well.
No, there's two benefits to this. Number one, you never want to see the Lakers win another championship, and I don't think they will for a long time. Like, now to build a winning team in basketball, you can't just say we're the Lakers and here's a bunch of money. It takes a tremendous amount of skill. You need salary cap experts. You need creativity. And I don't think they have the scouts or the front office acumen to do a lot of the things, you know, and that's why they were failing so miserably even before Luka. But even a player as good as Luka, I don't think it's going to change their fortunes that much. I'm surprised Toronto would be interested in Kawhi Leonard, though. That's the most shocking thing I've heard over the last 5 minutes. He's 34 years old with that injury history.
Yeah,
like, you better give him away.
I know.
And hell no, we're not doing an extension.
I know. That's the thing, too. It's the extension factor. Like, I get it if you're doing kind of like mercenary year to year. Let's see if we can get one season out of Kawhi. But to want to trade for him and then extend him, that's a dangerous game.
I mean, over the next 3 years, what's more likely? The Lakers get to a finals or Kawhi Leonard plays more than 60 games?
In a single season?
Yeah.
I'd probably go for the Lakers.
He has been injury prone for a long, long time, but now it's slowing down, and it's almost like if he fully exerts for a game or two, he needs a game to rest. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's load management. It's that his body is breaking down in a Brandon Roy type of way.
And it sucks so bad because he's still so dang good.
Yeah, yes. He plays, man. He's still awesome.
I mean, he was 28-6-4 on 50% from the field and 39% from downtown last year.
Unbelievable. He really should have had a career that's legendary.
Yep.
You know, but instead it was more about peaks and valleys. All righty, when we come back there, thank you, Chief. It'll be time to chat with new Baltimore Ravens play-by-play man, formerly of Dallas Cowboys. It's Kyle Yeomans here on 105 Through the Fan. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for a special guest to join us. This will be fun. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. As Now, the Cowboys will face the Ravens in Brazil week three, and a familiar face and voice will be doing the play-by-play in that Baltimore booth as Kyle Yeomans has just been named the Ravens' new play-by-play man, and he joins us here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. And yeah, I'm doing pretty well. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, but definitely, we're excited and humbled at the same time to continue to get to do some play-by-play, but on the opposite side of that game now. It's crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. So what's it like, man? There's only 32 of these gigs, and you got one. Like, reflect on that and, you know, what this means for your career and the accomplishment and all that.
Yeah, this was always the goal. This was always what I wanted. And I know Zach and you guys, I appreciate you bringing it up yesterday. I heard the kind words and the celebration you guys had on the show yesterday. But Zach has seen it. Everybody that's been around me really has seen it. That play-by-play was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the voice of a franchise and wanted to further my career in that aspect. So even doing what I've been doing with the Cowboys and hosting TV shows and podcasts and draft coverage and all of those elements along the way, it was always play-by-play on the side, too, that helped kind of elevate my game and elevate my ad-lib ability in studio. And it's just what I've loved doing. So to be one of 32 is absolutely incredible. It's the most humbling thing ever just to be even mentioned in some of the same sentences as some of the guys that I grew up listening to and idolizing in this industry. And now I get to be that voice for a community and for a franchise that these fans will get the chance to listen to for quite some time. And I mean, I know everybody here, I'm sure, and on the show as well, has grown up listening to Brad Sham and has grown up listening to Eric Nadell. And the amount of impact that they've had on your fandom sticks with you even into your adult years. And that's what I get the chance to do now. And it's really, really special.
We're so proud of you, bro. It's really awesome. I know we've talked plenty about it, the two of us. But yesterday it looked like, okay, so you had your rollout. What went down? I mean, you had a freaking billboard
that
there
was
in Baltimore.
Awesome.
So what was your day like yesterday?
That was really cool. That was a little bit of a surprise. So my wife and I flew up on Tuesday night. And we went immediately from the airport to the facility, which is about a 40-minute drive. It's in Owings Mills, Maryland. It's kind of a suburb of Baltimore, kind of like how the Star is in Frisco to Dallas. So we go up there, and we take a couple of photos. I sit down and record a podcast with a couple of their content creators just to introduce me to Ravens fans and introduce me to Baltimore as a whole, since they may not have seen what I've done with the Cowboys previously. So had those conversations and then got to go to dinner with a couple of the staff members and get to know everybody and introduce them to Lorena. And that was great. But then the next day was just jam-packed. We woke up early, had to go straight to the radio station because they rolled out the announcement at 8 a.m. Eastern time. I was on the radio for the flagship there at 8:20 Eastern in studio, meeting everybody and getting the first interview of the day. I went from one station to the next station, then went to TV and did a TV sit-down interview. We finally had a chance to kind of sit down and get a bite to eat. And then after that, had another two radio hits in a GM meeting with our flagship stations up there. Had to sit down with the general manager and get to meet him in person. And everybody was just incredible and so welcoming. But then my boss now with the Ravens said, okay, let's hop in the car. We're going to go to the stadium and get to see the booth and show you the stadium. We'll show you your booth. We'll show you the network booth and kind of give you a good look at how M&T Bank Stadium is. But on the way there, he said, hey, watch this. And as we looked up, there was the billboard next to the stadium off of the freeway. And me, my wife, and my boss were all like, whoa, that's crazy. How cool is that? And got to stop and take a picture with it, obviously, because my mom would be upset if I didn't. And so that was really fun. Then got to see the booth and hopped in an Uber, went back to the airport, and then was back home by 8:30 last night Central Time. So just a jam-packed 24 hours, and really appreciated the warm welcome from Ravens fans, but also the incredible send-off from Cowboys fans. It meant a lot, and I hope I did this franchise and did this city proud the way that I covered the team over the last 7-8 seasons, and hope to do the same now in Baltimore.
Well, we can't wait for you to get the scoop on how the Ravens tanked the Max Crosby medical records, dude. I mean, that is going to be freaking fantastic when you break that story, Kyle.
That's not going to be what I do the first week or first couple months on the job. I'm going to leave that up to the training staff and whatever they had to do.
You're going to work in a Baltimore accent a little bit, perhaps, on the broadcast, really try to ingratiate yourself into the community?
You know what? It's funny because somebody yesterday said, you don't sound Texan. And I was like, that's good, I guess. Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound... like a bad thing at that point. And they're like, well, now you got to find a way to fill in some Baltimore accents. So you're not the only one to say it that way. I'll see what I can do, but probably not. I can't do it justice. I would rather just say y'all and just own up to the fact that I'm a transplant from Texas to Maryland.
Hey, Kyle, who does your color for you? Who's working with you?
It is the great Gold Jacket Hall of Famer, Rod Woodson.
There you go. There you go.
That's incredible. And we got to call a mock game in the audition process together. He lives in Vegas. He flies out for each game, and he flew out for the audition process just because he wanted to be a part of it, wanted to give his input, and we called the final game of the regular season, the Pittsburgh and Ravens game that ended in that wide right field goal that
took
Pittsburgh to the playoffs. So we called that game together and just tried to put it on tape in the studio. They're actually going to release a couple of clips, I think, of that today on the Ravens website. So it was really cool just getting to meet him and talk to him. He's so humble. You would never know. He's one of the best defenders to ever play the game. I mean, he's just an incredible talent on the field, but he's an incredible person off it. I can't wait to get to know him more and get to pick his brain, too, in terms of football.
I imagine expectations are really high in Baltimore with the new coach and the OC and, of course, Lamar Jackson. How are you going about learning all the storylines as deep as you knew the Cowboys?
You know, it's funny because, and Brian can attest to this as well, so can Zach, but doing all the draft covers that we've done over the last few years, Baltimore is always the team that takes our favorite guys.
Amen to that.
They've always drafted super well, and we always look up and say, who drafted that guy? I really liked him. Oh, of course it was the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
Of course it was the Ravens. So a lot of these guys I've enjoyed covering from afar, you know, and just enjoyed watching from afar. And that doesn't even count, of course, Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and Trey Hendrickson and a lot of these guys that are impact players, but you see them on a weekly basis because they light up a highlight reel even away from Dallas and away from the Cowboys. So the expectations are extremely high. I think the fact that it's a first-year head coach and in the NFL, that hasn't necessarily bode well for late playoff runs recently. I mean, first-year head coaches tend to take a season or two. But with the talent level that Jesse Minter has to play with out there in Baltimore, it feels like they have every opportunity to make a run. The AFC North is wide open. I think the AFC in general maybe isn't as strong as it has been in the past. You don't have to go through a Tom Brady or a Patrick Mahomes the same way that you did initially. Josh Allen's still up there, but you have Lamar Jackson, and you feel like anytime he's on the field, he gives you a chance to win. So with the expectations being high and a new first-year head coach, it's a lot of excitement around the building, and I'm glad to just be a small part of that, and I can't wait to break it down whenever training camp starts in late July.
The voice of the Baltimore Ravens, Kyle Yeoman, joining us here in the G-Bag Nation. All right, so, Kyle, now that you're not with the Cowboys anymore, what's the reality here? Like, should we really be buying into the Christian Parker hype? Like, what are your closing thoughts on the Cowboys going into 2026 before you're just all about the Ravens?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. One, I would never sugarcoat anything on anything that we do. I tell it like I see it, and I'm always pretty straightforward in how I see it. You and I have even talked about it off air. I believe in what Christian Parker's doing. I believe in what Brian Schottenheimer is doing. I think, especially if this offense can remain as productive or at least close there to it as they were in 2025. And the defense becomes a mid-level defense. That's a significant improvement based off of being number 32 last year. Let's say they're low 20s, maybe even scratch into the teens. I think this is a 10 or 11 win football team. I really do. I think they've got all the pieces to do so. Where I have worry is the health and the depth, because at running back, what happens if there's no Javonte Williams? At corner, what happens if De'Ron Bland or Savona Revel or Kalen Carson or some of these guys at the cornerback spot aren't necessarily healthy for the entire season? I mean, how do you have enough there to maneuver? And then my number one spot that I still think the Cowboys should add to is the linebacker spot. I still think D. Winters is a good acquisition. I think he's going to play a lot of snaps for you, but the rotation that you want there, I'm not sold on that yet. However, I do trust in Christian Parker. I do trust in a lot of the veterans that they've brought back or traded for on that defense. I like Jalen Thompson. I mentioned D. Winters. I like Rashawn Gary. I think they'll be legit, but if there are a couple injuries, and of course those happen in the NFL, I'm interested to see how the depth can fill in. But I still think this is a team that's much better than they were in 2025.
Congratulations again, Kyle, and best of luck to you out there. I'm sure you're absolutely going to crush it. So don't be a stranger. We'll be looking forward to catching up with you week 3.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Looking forward to it already. Salute.
There he goes. Kyle Yeomans on his way out. Great career, as he mentioned, last 7 or 8 years for DallasCowboys.com and the Cowboys media team, and filling in for Brad Sham once, and did a hell of a job. And obviously he's been doing a hell of a job as a play-by-play man, introduced yesterday as the new main guy in Baltimore. So that's incredible, because not only is it such an accomplishment, but you do those jobs for life. You know,
absolutely.
It's like there's a permanence to it. You kind of etch your name in football history as you're going through that. Like, you're going to hear your voice as a massive part of a team's history, and that's just, it's big time stuff. So salute to Kyle, and I mean salute to the team up there. You know, that has created all this talent.
Oh yeah,
you know, and
Derek Eagleton, that group. Yeah,
I mean, nice job. Incredible scout, incredible developer, and you know, that's not the first guy that's absolutely hit the big time coming out of there. Okay, Sands is next. We'll talk with the Rangers play by play man and get you updated on Corey Seager's return and all that coming up next year on the Fan. Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105 through the Fan. We're about to chat with Jared Sandler as we've had Rangers news this afternoon. Congratulations to Ecuador. They've been threatening. They got their go-ahead goal. They are now leading Germany 2-1 in their final group stage game. This is the 86th minute, and with a win, they would almost assuredly advance. So this would be huge for them if they can hold off on this victory. I think Germany's playing a lot of their backups like the United States is going to tonight. I've seen some pretty sloppy play there in their back end. It could really be much worse, and maybe Germany's initial goal shouldn't have even counted, because in the process of winning the ball, he kicked a gentleman in the face while he was winning that ball to set up his goal.
He did.
I'm not digging Germany's kits right now.
No,
by the way.
Very un-German, aren't they?
Very un-German.
Not very Dutch.
Yeah, I'm used to like all white or like that multicolor look with the yellow and the black and the red.
They go with their flag, and then they go with the black and the white, which is pretty cool.
All right, Jared Sandler joins you now with the pregame coming up at 5:30. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Guys, I'm great. A few things. One, big night last night for Bafana, South Africa advancing past the group stage for the very first time in its country's history. That was a big celebration. And also, Zach Wolchuk, you there?
Yep.
How much do you miss Matt Hicks getting his levels checked on the headset before broadcast?
I think I'm overmodulated. Oh my gosh, it's one of the most things that I miss.
Yeah, well, we just got to experience Matt. He's questioning, is this, what does this do? Oh, I like it back. No, I like it this way. It'll probably change at least 3 more times. Matt's currently telling me I'm number one. He's letting me know how much he loves me in this very moment.
Hey, at least he's in that Tommy John underwear, man, and he's living comfortably.
You wearing, what underwear are you wearing? Yep, Tommy John, yep. Can you hear them? Or are you just listening to me? He's listening. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Love you, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
So Corey Seager's back, huh?
He is, yeah. So in the lineup tonight, Skip Schumacher said earlier that here off the bat, it might be, you know, a game on, a game off, two games on, a game off, you know, kind of like a build-up just because he's only played five games the last, you know, 40-some-odd days. But he's back. He finally able to clear the testing that he needed to clear. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to jump right in and contribute. I mean, this is a perfect place for him to return to. There really isn't a better hitter at this ballpark. He's a .411 career hitter against the Blue Jays. That's the most by any opponent in Blue Jays history. And he's over .400 hitter at this ballpark specifically. So hopefully, you know, some good memories help him, get back and hit the ground running.
That would be outstanding. Now, do you think he'll be full time, or are they going to need to give him days off every couple of days?
Yeah, no. So I think that he'll probably be one on, one off, or two on, one off. You know, kind of slowly working back before he's in there for, say, 10 straight days or anything like that. I think just because of the lack of games he's played. And Lucius, I think you can maybe pull this for G-Bag of the Day tomorrow. I think that's
Did you just answer the question?
Yeah, I think so.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my bad on that.
No, all good.
Germany's hanging on for life right now is what we're doing here, okay?
No, I get it. Hey, trust me, I've been in that studio. I've asked questions before, and then the minute I ask a question, I'm looking at the monitor or whatever is going on. I totally understand. I've been there.
So is the back and hamstring still a concern? Is that what we're looking at?
It's a good question, Gavin. I think ultimately it's just that he hasn't played a lot. You know, he's played five games the last, I think it's like close to 50 days, and they just want to be smart. I guess, you know, because this was a little bit of a lengthier concussion stay than initially anticipated, I think that, you know, they just, I don't think it's going to last a long time. I don't think it's going to be like 3 weeks of alternating games and days off or two out of every three. I think you might see it for the first week or so. But as is often the case in these situations, the minute Corey Seager's hitting and, you know, makes it really tough to take him out of the lineup, I think they're gonna have a tough time doing that. So I think here to start this first week, especially without an off day until we get to July 3rd, I think they're going to be just a little more conservative. It might be a game on, a game off, and a DH day, right, in a three-game stretch, stuff like that. I think they just want to be smart because at the end of the day, having Corey in the lineup is way better than not, and they just want to make sure they're not doing anything silly right off the bat.
What's the plan for Winston Santos? Have they kind of decided that? Did you get any more information? Like, is he somebody that they're looking at as a starter to fill in for Leiter for the time being? Is he a long reliever? I know Skip said that they were a little undecided when he was on with KNC earlier today.
Yeah, I think that I think that's probably a fair answer. Here's the reality of Winston Santos. He is one of their top pitching prospects, which is to say that I think there are a lot of people in the organization who are excited about what the future holds for Winston Santos. Is Winston Santos ready to take the ball every 5 days at the major league level on a team that's trying to, make a playoff spot? I don't know. It's tough to envision that he is for sure, just given the, you know, I haven't watched him pitch in the minors this year, but given his production in the minors, I think it'd be tough to just jump to that conclusion that, yep, he's definitely ready. I think right now the reality is that, you know, they need him to plug a hole here. They'll do that. Now, when that spot in the rotation comes up, is it possible that Winston Santos pitches after Cal Quantrill and they piggyback? Yeah, I think so. I also think it's possible that Jose Cornell comes back up once his minimum 10 days after being optioned down expire and he's eligible to come up again. So I don't know that Winston Santos is definitively here for the next month. I think he's got a chance to earn opportunities, but I just think because of the lack of any kind of a track record here, I think it's tough to know exactly how they want to use him until they get him out on the mound and see. But I don't know that. Yeah, I don't. My strongest hunch is that he's not for sure the fifth starter in the sense that, like, he's going to get the ball to go five innings every 5 days. He might start, but it might be in a more limited exposure piggyback type situation.
How do you like this this Blue Jays team? What problems do they present? How does Mackenzie Gore match up?
Well, they don't hit lefties very well. At least they've been a lot better against righties than they have against lefties this year. I think the Blue Jays are a good team that probably experienced a little bit of a World Series hangover, World Series loss hangover, and they've had some injuries. You know, they've been without Addison Barger for largely most of the year. Nathan Lucas has missed some time. Alejandro Kirk missed a lot of time. Dalton Varsho got hurt. I mean, every team deals with injuries, but that hasn't helped. And then Vladimir Guerrero hasn't hit a home run in his home ballpark all year. He only has 4 home runs this season. It's a really odd run for Vladdy because some of the peripherals – yeah, some of his peripherals don't suggest that anything's been going that wrong, but obviously the production hasn't been there the way you'd expect for Vladdy. The Blue Jays also have found ways to give games away. You know, you talk to Blue Jays people, they'll tell you, on a Monday we do this, on a Tuesday we do that, on a Wednesday we win, but then on a Thursday we do this. Like, they're finding different ways to screw up, which is kind of the opposite of how they were last year. With all that said, the Blue Jays, playing in a tougher division, they're 9.5 games out of the division. That's probably not, as likely of an outcome right now, but they're in a playoff spot. If the season ended today, they'd be in the playoffs. So, it hasn't gone great for them, but I think they've got a lot more in the tank than what they've shown. And they're a team somewhat similar to the Marlins in that athleticism, defense, versatility and how they can score runs is a big part of their identity.
Congrats to South Africa, Sands. Have a great night, and let's talk about a Rangers dub tomorrow around the same time. What do you say?
Sounds good, fellas. Take care.
Cheers. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. It's still 2-1 Ecuador. Ivory Coast leads Curaçao 2-0 in the 94th minute, so Ivory Coast is going to finish second in that group, and Ecuador trying to lock down the 3 spot here as we continue. It's the G-Bag Nation on the Fan, 30 minutes to go. Wolchuk, little proper round tripper coming up.
Auctions and midseason awards, that's next.